Maharaj Pariksit said, one may know that sinful activity is injurious for him because he actually sees that a criminal is punished by the government and rebuked by people in general. And because he hears some scriptures and learned a scholar, that one is thrown into hellish condition in the next life for committing sinful acts. Nevertheless, in spite of such knowledge, one is forced to commit sins again and again, even after performing acts of atonement. Therefore, what is the value of such atonement? For a pardon, some religious sects, a sinful man goes to a priest to confess his sinful acts and pays a fine, but then again he commits the same sins and returns to confess them again. This is the practice of a professional sinner. Pariksit Maharaj's observations indicate that even 5,000 years ago was the practice of criminals to atone for their crimes but then commit the same crimes again as if forced to do so. Therefore, owing to his practical experience, Pariksit Maharaj saw that the process of repeated sinning and atonement is pointless. Regardless of how many times he is punished, one who is attached to sense enjoyment will commit sinful acts again and again until he is trained to refrain from enjoying his senses. The word vivasa is used herein, indicating that even one who does not want to commit sinful acts and be forced to do so by habit. Parikshit Maharaj, therefore, considered the process of atonement to have little value for saving one from sinful acts. In the following verse, he further explains his rejection of this process. Text 10, sometimes one who is very alert so as not to commit sinful acts is victimized by sinful life again. I therefore consider this process of repeated sinning is going to be useless. It is like the bathing of an elephant, for an elephant cleanses itself by taking a full bath and then throws dust over its head and body as soon as it returns to the land. Wherefore, when Pariksha Maharaj inquired how a human being could free himself from sinful activities so as not to be forced to go to a hellish planetary system after death, Sukadeva Goswami answered, the process of counteracting sinful life is atonement. In this way, Sukadeva Goswami tested the intelligence of Maharaj Pariksha, who passed the examination by refusing to accept this process as genuine. Now, Pariksha Maharaj is expecting another answer from spiritual master Sukadeva Goswami. Translation, one may know that sinful activity is injurious for him because he actually sees that the criminal is punished by government and people in general, because he hears the scriptures and learns scholars that one is thrown into hellish conditions in the next life for committing sinful acts. Nevertheless, in spite of such knowledge, one is forced to commit sins again and again, even after performing the acts of atonement. Therefore, what is the value of atonement? So, the question was how to avoid the hellish punishments. And the answer was atonements. So this is correct in one sense. It helps relieve one of that sinful reaction. However, here Pariksha Maharaj is saying that people, in spite of the fact that they can see the obvious disadvantages of the sin, such as punishment by the government, criticism by people, and the information in scripture that you go to hell and you have to suffer, still they engage in sinful activities. So they can do some atonement and get rid of the result. But then again, they will commit another sinful activity and they will have to go to hell. And to counteract that, then they will do an atonement. So in other words, though it prevents them from getting this hellish punishment, it does not stop them from doing the sins. So this is the main problem with the prayaschitta. So the prayaschitta is part of the karma yoga system. To counteract a sinful activity by a pious activity suitable for the sin. Balance out plus minus and plus equals zero, so therefore you end up with nothing. no hellish punishment, no punya, because the two cancel each other out. So that's the basic idea behind a prayaschitta. Of course, this is involving the law of karma, and in the law of karma, of course, know that the sinful activity leads to suffering and a pious activity leads to enjoyment. So both acts are causes of bondage. So we can cancel out the hellish punishment by doing the pious act. But we do not release ourselves from bondage. We still have to take another birth in the material world and do activities and get more karma. So it doesn't really solve the problem. It temporarily gets rid of the immediate pain. So this is not a real satisfactory solution to the problem, according to Pariksha Maharaj. So therefore, he asks Sukadeva again that there must be some other process. And then Sukadeva replies. So as Prabhupada mentioned, this is a test of mentioning karma, etc., because obviously the import of Sukadeva's talk speech is bhakti. So if he's talking karma yoga is the solution, it is not the proper. And then the rationale here is given by Pariksit himself, that it doesn't really solve the problem because you simply do a puni to cancel a pap. But then again, you do a sinful activity, so it doesn't really help. And even if we don't do sinful activities, then we continue doing punyas and still we're bound up in the material world. So yes, it solves the problem of the sin, but it doesn't solve the problem of material bondage. So, of course, we can say that jnana will release one from karma completely, and soul yoga. So in the third canto, Kapiladeva, of course, discussed this. He said that the yoga system will dissolve your subtle body and all its karma. And similarly, the process of jnana, if done properly, will lead to liberation, which means no more subtle body, no more karma, etc. So when it's free from all desires, and etc. So these are also processes that work. But then again, Sukadeva has also indicated that, and of course Kapila in the third canto also has indicated that the process of bhakti is superior to those processes. So, this answer given by Sukadeva Goswami is a little bit imperfect because it doesn't even present the other processes, only one process, that is karma yoga process, which is not a solution at all. So obviously the intention of Sukadeva is not to say that this is the actual solution, but to show that there are higher things also, and it's a sort of test. So similarly, we will find in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna also says that karma yoga is the best. But later on, Krishna himself rejects that process. So the intention here is that we should, or the meaning is, we cannot always take statements literally. Sometimes, by the context, they are contradictory to the meaning of the whole text, so therefore we cannot take them. So that is why if we quote scripture, we have to be very careful. We can prove anything quoting scripture. We can quote it, you know, the opposite of whatever the conclusion of scripture is, by certain statements there. So it's very dangerous to do so. So we have to see the total context of everything. And it may be difficult in some cases. And therefore, we will have great arguments back and forth between the followers of Shankara and the Vaishnavas on the interpretation of different statements in scripture. Why it should mean this or why it should mean that. And they will analyze grammar and discuss that way. And ultimately, they will have to discuss context. What is the context of those particular statements? So in this way, we have to resolve the question. So sometimes it looks as if it means one thing, but if we take the context and the intention of the speaker, then we come up with a completely different meaning. So that is why some of these statements in the Upanishads look completely opposite. Nothing exists, nothing exists, you are Brahman, etc. So it looks as if the jiva is Brahman, or the world is illusion, etc., which is Shankara's philosophy. If we look at the context and we see it is not so at all, when the person is speaking, he's indicating something else completely different. So that is why we cannot simply take a statement here and a statement there and come up with a conclusion. We have to actually see the total intention of the author or the text. So here we cannot take literally the words of Sukadeva Goswami, because he's saying, oh, the solution is prayaschitta, karma yoga. This will solve all the problems. In a sense, yes, it is true on a very limited level. Yes, it does get rid of the sensory action, but it's not a permanent solution to the problem. So that is why Pariksit here is replying to the statement of Sukadeva, and then Sukadeva again begins to discuss the real means of destroying karma, etc. Now, destroying karma itself also is not a final goal. For people in the material world, it looks like that is the goal, and that's why it is mentioned so often, destroy your karma, get rid of suffering in the material world, etc. And we'll see promises in the Srimad Bhagavatam also. Even bhakti will destroy your karma, bhakti will get rid of your miseries, etc. Right? But that is not the goal of bhakti itself. So, this type of bhakti with this is called mixed bhakti, or karma mixed bhakti. So it's actually not the purest type of bhakti itself. So, hellish punishments and suffering in the material world is a motivation, definitely, for practicing spiritual life or even practicing dharma. So in that sense, prayaschitta is recommended. If one fears hellish punishment, that means at least one accepts scripture. And one does a prayaschitta to counteract the sin, so therefore one also accepts the law of karma, that sinful activities produce bad results. So that much is beneficial for a person. But that type of activity, prayaschitta, is not a real solution, ultimately. So therefore, though it is correct in one sense, still, we have higher knowledge and higher knowledge and higher knowledge beyond that. So higher than karma yoga is jnana. So we'll see in Bhagavad Gita, this is the perplexity of Arjuna. Arjuna is arguing from the point of dharma, or karma yoga, and I have to do this, but I can't do this because I'll kill these persons, and the Smriti says that it's sinful if I kill my relative and all this, so he's caught in that dilemma. And then Krishna answers by jnana, you're not the body. Don't feel suffering because you're killing, but it's not a body, you're not a person you're killing, it's only a body. So he gives a solution in terms of jnana. But that also, of course, is not a final solution either, simply to be detached and whatever. So that higher process still than that is the process of bhakti. So Arjuna, in chapter 2, he convinces Arjuna, you have to fight because you should be equal poised, and in failure or in success, you should be equal anyway, etc. And he even argues from the point of view of karma that it's the duty of kshatriya has to fight, etc. So he uses all sorts of arguments. But finally, the reason for fighting has got nothing to do with that at all. The only reason for fighting is his devotion to Krishna, and he'll follow Krishna's order. That's all. That's the ultimate reason he will fight. Not because of dharma, not because of sin, not because of jnana or whatever. But he doesn't reveal that in the text at all in the beginning. It's only at the very end of the Bhagavad Gita that Arjuna says, yes, I will, because you say I will do this. And so on. So there are different levels of interpretation of Shastra and things. So, and different, we can, any event we can interpret in terms of karma yoga, jnana yoga, sangha yoga, or bhakti yoga, and come up with a different solution. So similarly, the idea of suffering in the world, we can approach it from karma yoga, yes, prayaschitta. We can take it from jnana or sangha yoga, liberation. We can take it from the point of view of bhakti, serve the Lord, that's all. And destruction of karmas, etc. is a secondary byproduct of that. So we have different solutions to the problem. And in different places in the Bhagavatam, we'll find different solutions mentioned, but we should understand that the highest solution is the solution of bhakti itself. And to illustrate that, then we have the story of Ajamil. This is not even bhakti, it's indirect bhakti, because Ajamil had no intention of being a devotee at all, and he had no devotion when he chanted the name of Narayana. It's So it was accidental bhakti because the name of Narayana is the same as Narayana. So he uttered the name of Narayana. That's all. Of Supreme Lord. That was his benefit. Without faith, that without offense, but without devotion also. Huh? But that was enough to destroy all of his karmas and to destroy his hellish punishments. So, the conclusion is that if simply uttering the name of the Lord once, inattentively, without faith, produces this effect, if one practices devotion and utters the name of the Lord, how much more we'll get? Not only we get free of sinful reactions and hellish punishment, but we must get something much more than that. So that, of course, is more than swarga. We not only get rid of hellish punishment, if you want, you can get swarga loka or brahma loka. And some devotees go there. That's why devatas are there. Because that's what they want. So they get those positions, which means no hellish suffering, maximum of joy, maximum lifespan, no sickness, no old age, etc. Or one could go for liberation from the material world. So yes, the devotees get that liberation, but they're not interested in liberation as such, because that is unfavorable for bhakti. So instead of simply getting liberation, the Lord gives them a place in the spiritual world. So we have the liberation of Salokya, Sarsti, Sarupya, etc. But even that, the devotee may refuse, because his intention is not to get these things. His intention is simply to serve the Lord. So he may refuse these things. But of course, because the Lord is attracted to the devotee and to the bhakti in the devotee, therefore, he bestows everything favorable for the devotee's service. So therefore, he gets a spiritual body on the same planet as the Lord, and he serves him with intimacy. So, and he is given powers suitable to his service. So the Lord supplies everything to the devotee without his having to ask for it. So therefore we have these different processes mentioned in the Bhagavatam in different places. We should not be distracted by these things and think they are solutions. Ultimately, we have to understand that the conclusion of Sukadeva is the process of bhakti only, and nothing else. And in bhakti, pure bhakti is better than mixed bhakti. A mixed bhakti is even better than karma yoga, or jnana yoga, or astanga yoga. But preferable to the mixed bhakti is the pure bhakti. The results of all these things will be different. Yeah. Well, that is a, of course, but in one sense we can say it is an order. Give up all other dharmas, etc. Or an instruction. With the intention of showing that, one, bhakti is independent of any other process, and if you give up everything else, we don't incur any sin by that. But usually, if you give something up, you stop this karma or that karma, it's said to be sinful in the scriptures. But if we give those things up and we simply surrender to the Lord, there is no sin involved in that. What to speak of other sins of, you know, committing violent activities. But even the sin of omission is absent when one simply dedicates oneself to the Lord and stops all these other activities.
What is a stronger person makes a bigger innocent person to commit sinful activity?
Huh?
A very stronger person. He forces the innocent person to commit sinful activity.
Well, if he forces them, I don't know, if he takes a gun or something and tells them to do something, then it's not his fault, obviously. It's the other person's fault. But of course, forcing means he tempts them and the other person agrees. That's not force, really. Because they have such force to do it, but he may not be a force. He chose to do it, so that's another thing.
College nagging, senior students make their junior students.
Yeah, well, that's violence. That's just sadistic violence, we can say.
How do we understand the real intention of the author, what he wanted to tell?
That's why we listen to the commentaries.
But that is not given by the author himself, by somebody else's.
Well, but then we have to read the whole work and see if there's a contradiction. In this case, it's easy because you read what Pariksit says, and he doesn't agree with the conclusion of what Sukadev said. So then Sukadev says something else. So obviously we see from that context that Prayasit is not the solution. In other cases, it's more difficult. But nevertheless, if there's a contradiction to the main theme, then we have to study and see which is the stronger principle.
But she's asking about himself because he has commented in a conference by doing a destiny on stage. So he is guilty that attribute.
Well, the whole Bhagavatam is based on the question of Pariksit, what should I do now that I am going to die in 7 days? But he's not particularly worried about getting sinful reactions or whatever. That's not the point. It's such that I want to get rid of my sins. Of course, we could take that on a lower level, he would be, but since he's a devotee of the Lord, he's not really concerned heaven or hell or whatever. You know, wherever he goes, he can always serve the Lord. But he asked this question not just for his benefit. In one sense, we know that he knows the answer already. But everyone there didn't know the answer, so they all gave different answers. Karma, Jnana, Yoga, they gave all sorts of answers, and no one could agree what was the best thing to do. And of course, one answer is to hear and glorify the Supreme Lord. That's the first answer given. So, we can't say that he was really ignorant also in asking the question, but it had a purpose also. Of course, the whole purpose ultimately is to hear the whole Bhagavatam.
You said one of the
repression
is saying the same planet as the Lord. So does that include Goloka Vrindavan, one of the
repression? Yeah. Anywhere in the spiritual world.
Maybe what do you want? Dosa.